Our next item is the Ram Island Rod and Gunning Club. Tony?
Okay. Maybe Boris just asking them if they're willing to apply for an
What we have for us today is a discussion item and a briefing item, actually, regarding the Ram Island Rod and Gunning Club Incorporated. This previously came before you back in May. I'm sorry.
Tony, if I can interrupt, I would like to ask counsel for the applicant before we go through the full-blown presentation. This has been noticed as an enforcement action. This is now, I think, the third discussion the commission's had on it. I wasn't here for the first one, but it's coming back now again. It was noticed as a commission as an enforcement action. But I just wanted, before we go through the presentation, just ask counsel if it would be acceptable to submit a JPA application and move forward in that direction, if that would be acceptable to the applicant, as opposed to proceeding with this as an enforcement action. And if it's not at this point in time, we can go ahead and have the presentation and the debate. But I just wanted to ask the question before we get into it.
Yeah, I appreciate the question. For your record, John Daniel on behalf of the Ram Island Club. It's not a simple sort of yes-no question, because there's a lot tied up in that. If the question implies that the Riggs family would concur in the position of the Commonwealth that the state owns this submerged bottom, I think the answer is probably no, given where we are at this particular juncture. If the question is because of the complexity of the title issues, which I guess we're getting ready to discuss, or maybe not, I do think that the Riggs family, if we let that title dog lie with no ultimate conclusion, and the question is, would we accept a permit today, an after-the-fact permit for what's been done out there, the answer would be absolutely yes. I realize there are issues with regard to what I've just suggested as a path forward. I do think there's merit in that path forward by virtue of the fact that we could move this off your agenda rather than have to hear it a fourth and perhaps fifth time somewhere down the road. And I realize there are perhaps issues with respect to the public notice requirements with regard to a JPA. What I would suggest, and I'd be interested in your counsel's perspective, is we've been here three times. It's been noticed three times. You know, I don't know that we necessarily violate the public notice requirement if we were to move to a discussion about conditions for some sort of after-the-fact permit, if the commission wanted to discuss that today. I apologize for the length, but I wanted to be clear about sort of where we were, but I do appreciate the question.
That's fair, and I appreciate the response, and I'm going to have to consult with counsel, but I'm not sure that we can, and I'll ask counsel if we can issue a permit without making some sort of determination about jurisdiction, and so that, that's a question I'll ask counsel, but I'll also ask about whether or not we can move forward immediately with issuing a permit in light of the fact that we haven't noticed a joint permit application or specific application, even though, as you say, this has been before several times. The commission itself is familiar with the details of the case, but it hasn't been noticed as a as a permit application specifically to the public. I just raise these issues but want to hear from council about whether we can proceed to issue a permit without and literally setting aside this question of jurisdiction or title.
Okay, fair enough.
May I?
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Daniel. First of all, for the record, I want to note that Troutman Sanders has been very cooperative in this process, and I appreciate the spirit that they've engaged in this very difficult issue. Turning to a preliminary matter, I want it to be clear to the Commission and to those who are affected by this issue that the Commission has no jurisdiction to determine property ownership. The only issue before the Commission with respect to jurisdiction is whether it, based on the record before it, has jurisdiction over the property, the subject property here being the house, I'll say over Ram Island, where Ram Island used to be. Turning to the question of whether public notice is required before the Commission can issue a permit, I will say yes. And I'll explain this, and I'll, of course, will be interested in Mr. Daniel's response because he may have some insight that I am missing here. Under 28.2-1205 of the Virginia Code, which speaks to permits for use of state-owned bottomland, it, under subparagraph A, requires the Commission to consider the project's effect on the following. And in pertinent part, it says adjacent or nearby properties, as well as tidal wetlands, marine and fish resources, and other reasonable and permissible uses of state waters and state-owned bottoms. Actually, the last one's probably not an issue because we're just talking about the footprint under a house. However, while there's no express provision in the code requiring public notice, I don't believe that the Commission can take everything into consideration that it's required to consider under 1205 without having the public notice. So it's for that reason I believe that we should have it. We should advertise it and have public comment on the permit application before we can issue it. But I can't point to any provision in the code that requires it. It's my view, it's my opinion that there's an implicit requirement because the Commission is required to take these things into consideration before it issues a permit.
So, Councilor, you're saying that the distinction between this being noticed as an enforcement action versus being noticed along with a joint permit application is what sets up that difference?
If that's the impression I gave, I misspoke. I'm operating on the factual assumption that because this is an enforcement action, it hasn't been noticed for public comment. Is that correct, Mr. Watkinson? So it's not been noticed to the public as it would be let me get my brain working here. It's not been noticed for public comment in the way that it would be noticed as if it were a permit application. There's been no notice for the enforcement action, but there would be notice if it was a permit application. Is that correct, Mr. Watkinson?
That's correct. And I would not to interrupt, but I would like to raise one point relative to your assessment of the law. There is a regulation that the Commission has. It's 4 VAC 20-120 at SEC. And the general provision states that the Marine Resource Commission hereby requires a public notice on all applications made pursuant to Chapter 12, 22-100 at SEC of Title 28.2. Such public notice should be made in accordance with the following provisions, and then we have a number of provisions about publishing the paper and things of that nature. So if the Commission did adopt a regulation to sort of establish how we would do the public notice process, that wasn't really articulated in the law itself.
Thank you, Mr. Watkinson.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with Mr. Kugelman's analysis. I think it would be a bit of a stretch given the regulation and so forth. I'm really looking for opportunities to get to some resolve that are outside the scope of this title fight that may take a lot of dollars and a lot of people's time and energy. And I frankly worry about, would we be setting ourselves up with some fatal flaw in the process if we didn't follow the particular guidelines and regulation with respect to public notice. Everybody knows about this. I can't imagine a scenario where anybody else gets involved, but every time I leave here, a couple more do. So I don't disagree with the advice that council has given you one bit. I don't know if maybe, and again, perhaps some sort of no permit necessary route, which I don't believe would require the public notice, might be a way to go. As all of you know, we've been here three times. We don't have resolve on the title. I think there's a way maybe to get resolve, but we're still subject ultimately to the jurisdiction of the City of Virginia Beach with respect to the structures itself, their stability, their requirements, and what they need to have in order to be able to, you know, occupy the dwelling. So I just, as early, as preliminary comment, suggest that because it doesn't get us into the public notice quandary that we just discussed. So,
just Counselor. Thank you very much, Commissioner. One thing I do want to point out, just for the benefit of the commission, and I'm sure Mr. Daniels is aware of this, that to the extent that the Commonwealth has jurisdiction over this piece of bottom land that we're here about today, it has delegated its building permitting and building code enforcement authority to the City of Virginia Beach. So regardless of who, like Mr. Daniel points out, title at best is unclear at this point. But regardless of how it shakes out here today, the City of Virginia Beach still has the permitting authority with respect to safety structure, occupancy, all that kind of stuff. And the other issue I would raise is that I believe that the commission has the authority not to exercise its jurisdiction even if it has it. So the no permit necessary suggestion is certainly within the authority of the commission to entertain.
Thank you.
This is what I really enjoy about what Virginia does for the whole public meeting part of this. I mean, we're talking about things that are trying to resolve a real problem. We're doing it all out in the open. It may be an opportunity to go back in closed session, but I don't think so. You know, because we're trying to avoid litigation and fighting and cost and money, and everybody wants that. So if there is a way for us to hear out what they have to present and make a determination not to go forward if we choose, as a route to have an alternate route, I guess, than issuing a permit, which we have determined we cannot do without proper notice at a later time, that I think we're probably in a position to move forward.
Well, I think
that's what I'm hearing without the opportunity to go back in a closed room and ask that of our council. That's what I think I'm being told, and I just want to make clear that that's what the thinking is.
I think at this point we'd probably do well to go ahead and go forward with the presentation, and then if the NPN or no permit necessary option is a route that we can explore, I would suggest we do that with the guidance of staff and council, and have that discussion. And if that's not a viable option at the end of the day, then we'll have to discuss alternative ways forward. But I wanted to put that out there about the JPA right up front, because it seems to me that shifts gears and potentially puts us on a path to remedying this thing. Right now we're still in an enforcement mode, and we want to see how we might move forward otherwise. But if the NPN option is one that's viable legally and from a policy standpoint, then that's something we can consider too. But we'll look forward to that discussion following the presentation.
I appreciate your raising that early so we can have this discussion, and I will defer now to
thank you.
Tony and let him talk to you.
Before I get started, in light of what was just described, I do want to make mention of one thing to consider as this goes along today, and as I described sort of where we've been, where we are, and where we might go. And it relates to, I think, the question and the debate that just occurred relative to jurisdiction and accepting a permit now versus one later, is that, you know, we've always maintained that the issue of jurisdiction could be raised at any time. And if we're going down the permit process route or even complete the permit process route based on the submittal of a JPA and a public interest review process, including the public notice. That does not, in our estimation, forestall the notion that someone could always bring more information to the table regarding jurisdiction and clarify that we did not have authority based on a King's grant or whatever there might be. So I do believe that could be raised at any time. We have maintained that, I think, in my tenure with the commission, that that's just one thing that's always ripe for discussion. And, in fact, we've got, I think we could go back to a case in Curl's Neck that was debated in the late 80s where there was debate of a King's grant, and we entered a, I won't say a consent, but an agreement, basically, with them saying they got our permit, but we agreed that, and they agreed that it did not forestall them from proving that they had or satisfying the requirements that they had a King's grant down the road and did not require a permit. So I think that's always an option. And with that said, something to keep in mind, and what I really want to do is just sort of remind the commission where we are here and what got us back here today, and then how that was addressed to some extent, I think, by the letter we got yesterday evening from the Attorney General's office, which actually was a memo to Paul from staff at the AG's office, which we have shared with Mr. Daniel, and he has shared, I assume, with the Riggs. And it's in your book as the very last page or two of this section of the items. But with that said, I think just some background is in order. Today it's on the agenda as a briefing regarding the title information and the commission jurisdiction over use of Sebaquis Bottom in Back Bay. And this is in the Pungo area of Virginia Beach, and it's related to the expansion of the Ram Island Rod and Gunning Club Incorporated and structures including a second story, a power poles, power line, and attached decking at the piers. And while I had prepared a bit of a presentation related to just general jurisdictional issues, Commonwealth and state submerged lands and some of the history from the 1700s until now over, you know, where jurisdiction comes from and how the law was construed to address the commission's jurisdiction and state's protection of its submerged lands property, I don't think that's necessary given the opinion that or advice that we received from the AG's office relative to the title information. But as you recall, back in May of this year, and we could show some slides of the structure or the general location in Back Bay if you want to, but the issue was that back in the near the end of 2011, we had gotten word that the building was out there and being added to, and we evaluated and investigated what was there and corresponded with the Riggs, and it was our position that, you know, it's over Back Bay, it's in the water now, there's no island underneath of there, although the consensus was at the time that it was an island at the site and it eventually eroded away and the house remained in that spot. And we, in our correspondence, asked for information relative to the history of the site and any authority to be there and, you know, what had happened over the years there. And we didn't get any written response. Mr. Kevin Riggs did come by our office one day and leave us with a governor's grant that were for Ram Island itself. And we took a look at that and asked for advice from Paul on whether or not, if it eroded away subject to those grants, did we still have jurisdiction? And the consensus was at the time when things land erodes and there's state unsubmerged lands around it, that becomes state submerged lands where it eroded. And so that's the path we went. We did some further investigation. We eventually, after another letter requesting some information from Mr. Riggs, we did a formal site inspection, and as a result of that, I issued a notice to comply, which gave the option of removal of the structures that we think were built after 1960. There's clear that there were portions of the structure built, maybe close to 100 years ago. Now I think we had a 1914 or something depiction, or maybe a few years later of there being something there. And so we didn't dispute that, but we did have some photographic evidence that suggested that it had been expanded since 60, and we felt that is what needed authority from the commission. There was a power line out there. There's been some discussion about whether or not it was there, say, as early as the 40s, whether or not it's been taken down, added, replaced. I don't know. Or new poles put in. And so that was not quite clear, but, you know, it may have been a power line there as well. So our notice to comply suggested remove the structures that were there after the commission's jurisdiction or submit a joint permit application for review of the entire structure that we could subject to the public interest review that we've just sort of described. We didn't get an application, and Mr. Daniel was retained to represent the interest at the hunting club or Ram Island. And we came to the commission in May as a basically an enforcement item. We had not received an application to review and to solicit public comment for, and we brought it as an enforcement item, basically requesting that the commission take legal or ask the Attorney General's office to take legal action. At that meeting, and the letter following the May meeting is the first item in your packet, the evaluation materials and book items that we had placed before the commission are the second item in the packet that you have in front of you today. So that correspondence is there. As a result of that meeting, Mr. Daniel, you know, suggested that there was potentially a claim to the land based on King's Grant and that they would like some time to review that. We debated how much time that should be, and you suggested that or decided that we'd like to see something in 2 months that we could then begin our evaluation of that matter, or the AG's office could begin its evaluation of that matter. And so that happened in late July. Mr. Daniel presented to Paul the information that they had come up with. Paul provided that to us to look at, and that began the review of the legal documentation at the Attorney General's office. And then last evening, we received the memorandum, that's the last item in your packet, which the Real Estate Division and the Attorney General's office reported what they felt was there and, you know, sort of what action was appropriate for the commission. And rather than read the entire thing myself, certainly you're welcome to go through it, and I would like Paul to maybe expand on the rationale for the decision and the discussion of the sort of recommendation. But I will, for the record, you know, refer you to the three items in the memo from Steve Owens that says, Mr. Riggs and the gun club have not demonstrated an unbroken chain of title to the now subaqueous lands that were formerly Ram Island back to a 1693 King's Grant. The arguments made by Bridge Trust Title Group are unconvincing and do not comport with our understanding of the basic facts or law applicable to this title. And the and finally, the third was the Commonwealth's ownership of the subaqueous lands in question and VMRC's authority over such lands has not been rebutted. And then there's several pages of discussion, which I think maybe we could hear from Paul on to describe that in more detail or as you think is necessary. And so where we're at from a staff standpoint is we're kind of back at, in a sense, of where we were when we came in May. And I will say that while we proceeded to the commission with enforcement action because we didn't have an application, the notice to comply that initiated that commission meeting offered the ability to submit an application for review. So, I mean, that's still, I think, an option on the table for the commission. With that in mind, I'd restate my previous comment right as I started that, you know, even if we go that route, jurisdiction is always something that can be brought up and debated at any time in the process or, I guess, even after the process. And so I think that's where we are at the staff level. This sort of all boiled down to legal advice issues regarding the chain of title and what the titles originally suggested were there and what was included in the titles. And, of course, this all happened beginning in the 1600s and up through a couple governor's grants involved in the late 1800s and then 19, 14 or so until today. So it's a case that obviously it's amazing the amount of information. And I didn't mention, and part of this was we asked an independent title examiner to look at the information that had been provided. And I mean, his conclusion was that the title examiner did the work for Bridge Title Trust, knows what he's doing, and he didn't see anything wrong with the chain of title and the links from one sale to the next. He did find what he called one ambiguity was related to the 1914 governor's grant, and that at that time there was a case regarding who could get the proceeds from the sale of the property. And I'm sure legally you might characterize the case as something different than that. And it went to a special commissioner to look into the situation, and they decided that, you know, they could sell the 60 acres of land there along Back Bay, and that Ram Island was a part of that, but it had originally been attached to that and become separated by erosion and been an island. The people that wanted to buy the whole lot didn't feel comfortable that Ram Island itself was clearly part of it, and that it was like, wasn't a clear title, and so they asked that a governor's grant be procured for that part of it to finalize the purchase of the property. And from what I understand, that was all recognized by the court and decided by the court that that was the circumstances, and the property was eventually sold and the proceeds divided amongst a bunch of folks. And then they had other, I guess, transfers of title along the way. So, you know, that kind of, in a sense, it's unclear what all that meant, but it did support the notion that we always had that there was an island out there, that something had been there and been built on land, and that it eventually eroded away and was, looked like it was eroding in 1914. So that's where we stand. I think the letter from the Attorney General's, or the memo from the Attorney General's office, is the, you know, key right now for the Commission to consider. And I'll be happy to try and answer any questions you might have. And certainly Mr. Daniel is here from their perspective, and their folks are here. And if need be, I think, you know, maybe Paul could expand on the discussion aspect of the memo from Steve Owens, and we can go from there.
Well, Mr. Watkinson, can you comment on the concept of approving this on an NPN basis or no permit necessary basis?
No.
I mean, can the commission do that and simultaneously essentially assert jurisdiction over the bottom land portion?
Paul, and I'm not going to dispute his legal advice here, that, you know, the commission has some discretion to take jurisdiction or not take jurisdiction.
Excuse me, sir.
The commission has jurisdiction to either take or not take jurisdiction. Our typical NPNs, I would suggest, have been based on the statute and what is authorized by statute, a private pier, congressional navigation projects. There's a list of law things in 1203 that are authorized by statute. Those are generally the NPN categories. We don't take jurisdiction in man-made basins, and so we issue NPNs there. Obviously, our NPN letters are in conjunction with wetland board reviews, and if the project's above low water, we send out an NPN for that. We don't have jurisdiction, either by statute or by physical geography. And so we don't, and that's what the nature of our NPNs usually take that form, not that the commission just waives jurisdiction. We have in the western part of the state set a line at 5 square miles based on AG's advice to do some administrative, you know, boundary between what could be owned and what may not be, and where the commission should take jurisdiction. Again, not to dispute what Paul has suggested. I don't disagree that that's an option, but it hasn't been the tact we've generally taken. There are just a few places of state submerged lands in the Commonwealth that are determined to have been in a King's Grant. You hear a lot about the Commonwealth versus Morgan, which is the Carter's Cove case, where it was decided that a piece of the cove was part of a King's Grant and what led to that, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And that was a dispute between this commission over orchard leasing and a bulkhead project, permit project, and whether or not they had to get anything from us. And so that provides some guidance, but, you know, some legal scholars, you know, find some flaws in how that was done and what the facts were. And you had two issues there, and I think it's important to point out, and Paul can sort of, I think, improve on how I described this, that the courts sort of looked at what the legal aspects were, which is, could the king grant submerged lands back then based on English common law and the Magna Carta and whatnot? And the state was taking the position that no, back in that period of time, the crown, through its colonial governors, couldn't grant submerged lands and tidal waters because they were public commons or however you want to describe those. But the Supreme Court of Virginia ruled that no, that's not the case. They could. The king and its colonial governors did have that power, and the state, through special compacts and grants set up by the General Assembly, could do the same thing. And then you had the sort of factual evidence aspects of the case, which was, did the patent itself from the king back in the 1600s or whatever the time period was of the Carter Creek case include the code? And at that time, there was a contemporary surveyor who tried to redraw the lines of what he thought they were there, and he concluded that one of the call lines went across the code from one point to another, I guess is the way to describe it. I mean, it's probably more to it than that. And that the boundaries of the patent included the code, whereas most of the patents called for land along the creek or near the creek, and it wasn't clear that they included it, but in some cases you could redraw the lines possibly to have some evidence that the patent included it. And so there's this sort of legal aspects to it, and then there's the factual aspects to it. And those are some of the issues, I think, that legally have to be dealt with. And, of course, as Paul pointed out, the commission hears that from time to time, and you might decide jurisdiction-wise that there's compelling evidence to suggest there is that title and not do anything, or it's not clear, as has been described in the AG's office now, and that we should maintain jurisdiction. So I think that's where we are.
Thank you, Mr. Watkinson. Questions?
I have one question for Tony Weiss up here on this subject. Is it your understanding, not necessarily just from a legal position, but a policy position as well, that since we are entrusted with the public trust on submerged lands in the Commonwealth, that a decision about no jurisdiction would in any way be binding or an admission upon the state? Has that ever been the case in your background?
Oh, man, I think you're right. I mean, I think that decision has to be looked at in terms of our public trust responsibilities and the burden that's been placed on this commission to fairly, you know, decide how to use the state resources. And I don't know that I have an experience with regard to how something like that might be construed, but I think it is a slippery slope to take that tact in one case and waive jurisdiction when, in fact, it would probably be used when there's less than compelling evidence in the future regarding claims of ownership as a means to avoid commission review of a project in the future. So from a precedent standpoint, I think there's something to consider as well as the circumstances and facts of a particular case.
Thank you. Mr. Kugelman, would you like to elaborate on the memo that we have that Tony made reference to?
Certainly. If I may, just as a preliminary matter, questions of jurisdiction, I think, demand precision. While Tony, in a practical sense, explains what I was getting at in an appropriate way, I want to be clear that when he's talking about the historical position that the commission or VMRC has taken with respect to no permits necessary, actually, that's really a determination that they could not bring an enforcement action, so we can't require you to have a permit because the commission absolutely has no jurisdiction there. Here, the jurisdiction is the power to act, and there's no waiver of jurisdiction in failing to assert it, in so much as, analogously, a police officer may pull you over and may give you a warning but not give you a ticket, even though he has the jurisdiction to do so. I'm not quibbling with the policy decisions, but I just want to make sure from the legal perspective the commission's clear that there is a distinction between an NPN because we don't have the commission doesn't have jurisdiction and the commission's determination
that it doesn't want to exercise jurisdiction that it has. While it has that ability, it is a policy decision for the commission to make and by staff recommendation. So I don't want this to be construed anyway as I'm leaning one way or the other. I view my job as to give an impartial legal analysis so the commission can make decisions in that proper context. With that, unless there's any questions on that point, I will move into the memo. Okay. I mean, candidly, I could talk for hours. I went to school on this, researching this, with respect to the law, outlining the law from King's Grant to the present. As a practical matter, and I think this is where the commission really would like me to drive to, and if there are follow-up questions, I'll certainly be happy to entertain them. In the rubric that Tony set up, we need to look at whether the king had the authority to grant the bottom lands, and if so, turning to the factual question as he would characterize it, did it do so here? Bottom line is the Virginia Supreme Court has acknowledged that there are differing views on this, but in Virginia, the law recognizes that the king had the authority to convey submerged land to private individuals, and that that qualifies as a special grant under 28.2-1200, which carves out the Commonwealth's ownership of bottom land for those granted away by special grant. The question then becomes here is whether Ram Island. I want to make sure I say this precisely. Whether the submerged land around Ram Island or the submerged land that used to be Ram Island was conveyed by special grant to the current holder, which I believe is the Ram Island Rod and Gunning Club. And if the submerged land was not conveyed by an unbroken chain of title to the gun club, the Rod and Gunning Club, then it doesn't have ownership of the submerged land. However, if it does, and there is a grant, a valid grant that conveys the bottom land, then the Rod and Gunning Club does own the bottom land. Just by taking a step back in a more general sense, when upland becomes submerged land, the submerged land reverts back to the owner of the surrounding submerged lands. So if you have a king's grant with upland there and it submerges, it reverts to the owner of the king's grant. But if the commonwealth's the owner of the surrounding submerged land, then it reverts to the commonwealth. I tried to be succinct. The problem is I've got so much information running around in my head from researching this so much I may not have been clear. With that, I will entertain any questions of the commission seeking to clear that up.
So, Paul, the way this is laid out in the memorandum, the Attorney General's office is suggesting that the bottom lands remain owned by the Commonwealth.
To be more precise,
that's unrebutted.
Right. To be more precise, what the memo concludes is that because of some evidentiary failures. On the part of the gun club has not rebutted the presumption that the Commonwealth owns the bottom land in question here, and therefore, presumably, the now submerged Ram Island is Commonwealth's bottom land. Was that clear?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
Is that based on the title report that the applicant had done?
That and some additional information that the real estate and land use section obtained on its own. There were some, like I said, I don't want to sit here and just read the whole memorandum, but there were some documents that the real estate section had to get on its own to determine what the extent of the conveyances were.
Further questions at this point from Mr. Kugelman or for staff? Tony, if I can just ask in terms of the options in terms of how to move forward. I mean, this came before us as an enforcement issue.
And that's where it's resided so far.
In reality, I think, yes, it did come in May as an important item. It was being evaluated, and Mr. Daniel appeared at the meeting last month during the public comment period to ask the commission to, you know, move forward and let's see if we can't resolve this. And at the time, it was agreed that we would bring something back to the commission this month. And so it's on your agenda now as a briefing on those legal items relative to the chain of title from the findings of their the Ram Island Gunning Club. And so, yes, I think we're at a stage where we were in May from a staff perspective, with the understanding that, you know, while we, in our evaluation at that time, said, you know, we got to pursue enforcement because we don't have an application, I mean, that option still, I think, exists to the commission, and that was what was offered in my notice to comply prior to the commission meeting.
So if we were to move forward and try to shift into a permitting course of action, we would ultimately need to have a joint permit application from the entity, the gun club.
Yeah, and that's not too different. You've dealt with this in other situations where we haven't gotten stuff from folks, and you said, okay, we'll give you however much time to submit a joint permit application to begin the review process, but if we don't, then staff will bring it back after a certain amount of time to, you know, proceed with the enforcement action, which generally is requesting that the Attorney General's office proceed with that.
Thank you. Other questions of staff? Carter, Ms. Fox?
If we go the JPA route, based on the assumptions in this memo that that the Commonwealth owns the land, then let's say the JPA is filed. The commission has the right to go NPN and move forward, or the commission has the right to ask for public comment and then come back in here where we have people for and people against and so on. And that would happen, the JPA route would be consistent with the finding of the Attorney General's office that the ownership of the land is in the Commonwealth. Is that correct?
That would be my assessment, yes.
It's two things come to mind. Well, one thing comes to mind. It seems to me that this issue, because of its importance, should not be swept away in an NPN without public review. And so I guess I would be inclined at this stage to, if Mr. Daniel wants to submit the application, and then we would handle it in the ordinary process, and we would rely on the Attorney General's opinion here as to who owns the land, and therefore that we have the authority to rule. I guess that's the way I'm.
Sure.
But I think that having the public involvement is probably important at this stage. That's my preliminary thought.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. And just to elaborate, if we were to pursue that course of action, we would, I presume we would suspend the enforcement action pending receipt of a JPA, and then process the JPA as quickly as we could.
That would be the way we would normally
come back before the commission.
Right.
Okay. Further questions of staff before we
one more legal question,
yep. Mr. Sessions.
So the Attorney General in the memo is saying they do not believe there's an unbroken chain of title from the King's Grant. They think that chain of title is broken to the applicant,
and they believe that the King's Grant did not convey the bottom land to begin with. So there was no submerged land that was not owned by the Commonwealth.
that would also further assert that the 1914 sale that Mr. Watkinson referred to earlier only conveyed title to mean low water. So regardless of whether there was a valid King's grant, the grant of Ram Island was limited to a mean low water grant. And I believe that sums it up. There may be some more in there, but that's, in my recollection, the pertinent points that the memorandum makes.
Because the King's grant didn't convey the bottom land, because it wasn't bottom land when the King's grant was intact, or when he granted that, because it was an island. It was high ground. Is that the rationale?
No, sir. I mean, basically what it comes down to is King's grant ended at mean low water. And because it's a living fee, if you will, I'm sure you're familiar with that developing beachfront real estate, that, you know, the mean low water changes. And your rights end at mean low water no matter where that is.
All right. Any further questions, Mr. Plumlee?
I don't want to interfere with any process that Mr. Daniel has prepared to go forward with today, but I do have a question because I think the fantastic Mr. Fox has put his finger on something with regards to whether or not what we're going forward with today is some opinion that we're going to have to compare to the Attorney General's opinion, and we're going to be asked to sit here like a court in some way and decide ownership, or if you're going to put on evidence that's more akin to what would be in a JPA and the merits of the project would be put on. And I was curious to know, you know, if that would make better sense to advertise it as a JPA and then bring all these issues together in one hearing. And I understand you've been through a lot of process, so that's the question I had for counsel.
Fair enough. And look, yeah, I would like to hear from Mr. Daniel at this point.
I'm always looking for resolve with this commission on sticky problems. So I hope you all know that. And I'm here today in that vein. What I cannot do in representing my client appropriately is to not take issue with some of the process, specifically with some of the conclusions in the opinion. Well, I don't know what it is we got from the Attorney General. It's something called an internal memo. The Attorney General knows how to write an opinion. We didn't get one of those. But I cannot, in good conscience, not talk about that opinion, what our view of that is, and the view of our expert who provided a detailed report to this commission and so forth. But having said that, as I said, I don't know, 20 minutes ago, and as Mr. Kugelman has, I think, advised, if the commission would like to... And as Tony has concurred, the issue of jurisdiction and title can always be brought up at any point in time. And I'm not looking for that fight here today or tomorrow if we can find resolve. But this is the third time back here for these people. Every time there is a U-turn or a new direction or some other facet that we're asked to go chase. And these people... can't afford that. They can't afford what they've done so far. So if there's some resolve in the terms of an NPN today, which does no harm to anybody, if we're worried about the structure, if we're worried about the kind of window panes, if we're worried about what has to be, all that's going to be taken care of by the City of Virginia Beach so that there's not debris floating all over Back Bay and getting in the way of me and others who sometimes frequent that area. So that's going to be taken care of. This commission, I believe, I think I heard Mr. Kugelman say, has authority. What I heard Mr. Watkinson say was it would be untypical. Well, I mean, I just sat through the last case, and we did something that was somewhat untypical. I think we referred to it as a new precedent. So what? Life goes on. Things grow. We do things differently to suit the situation. And if that's an avenue that we are ready to pursue today, I will forego 6 or 7 hours of discussion on the final report before I introduce my dirt lawyer friend, that's a word of endearment, Mr. Fox, to really get into the cases and the title. But we're prepared to do that. And frankly, we may have to in order to, do what we're required to do as attorneys on behalf of our client. Now, I don't know really where to begin, and I'm still answering your question, believe it or not. But I'm surprised to know that all of a sudden the clock rolled back to May 22nd and we're here on an enforcement matter. And frankly, I'm kind of shocked because, you know, we've talked about notice. Read number 10. Is there anything in there that gives my people any kind of notice? Have they gotten any correspondence with respect to their due process when we're talking about enforcement and criminal matters? I don't think so. So how can we possibly be back there? But if we are, and let's assume we are, a resolution to an enforcement matter is a no-permit necessary decision. So we can do that. So I'm willing to give up on the – I'll trample all over the due process rights of the rigs if that's where we are in order to get to an MPN. But I really don't know exactly where we are. But I've got a fair amount to say about this title and this Attorney General's opinion, and I just soon keep it between me and myself.
Well, Mr. Dane, I think you can appreciate the position we're in. I very much appreciate the fact that you all are back here now for the third time, and the imposition of that is no small thing. And we just last night received this word of this memo as well. So the commission, frankly, is in the same position in terms of learning and discovering as we go through this that there's been a product that's come out of the Attorney General's office. So we're all in the same boat at this point. But having said that, I think what we have to figure out, and that's why I asked the question right up front, of whether you, on behalf of your client, would be willing to enter into an agreement to submit a JPA so that we could go down the permitting route as opposed to where we are today, which, as I understand it, is an informational update on an enforcement situation. So, I think in the interest of resolving this, we need to find a way forward. You've offered that we might consider an NPN. I think the commission needs to weigh that and the implications of that. I mean, we've heard from our staff that, it would be somewhat out of the commission's historical practice to do that in light of the fact that there's not a statutory exemption that's being invoked by going forward with the no permit necessary action. And yet, it's worth discussing the merits of that. I would also like to explore whether we could move into a JPA process without – I mean, it seems to me that if we do that, it doesn't foreclose your client from bringing information at a later date that in any way challenges the jurisdictional question. The JPA itself, the entry of that application allows us at least to move forward with considering the question of permitting, as opposed to right now we're stuck in between because this came to us as an enforcement issue, and so we don't have an application in front of us that we can approve in the normal process.
No, but I don't mean – I'm not being argumentative, and I'm happy for you all to have the discussion about the NPM. And don't take my comments to be ruling out, a JPA process. My point is that given the duration – that this has been ongoing, if there's a way to close this door today while we're here, and there is apparently, I mean, there is a path that you can do that. Whether that's what you might choose to do or not is entirely within your purview. But I can't not address the information that's before you, and in good conscience put my head down tonight that I did my best to represent the interests of these clients.
Fair enough. Let me just follow real quickly, if you don't mind, Mr. Daniels. I'd like to ask Tony Watkinson a question in terms of just thinking through the ways forward.
Tony, in light of all that we've seen as a commission, is it possible that if a JPA were submitted, that you could approve it administratively? For example, as a almost like a page two item, or just administratively without additional review?
My initial answer would be no, and I will explain that and also maybe some nuances to that. No being that there are components here that we feel are outside the footprint of the house that existed in 1960 or 62. And we probably need to go through some process to make sure that that's legally authorized by this commission based on its authority that it derived in 1962. We generally have a consent item process for applications that are after the facts, that have a component of violation that we have had an JPA for. We've gone through the public notice process. There's been no protest. Staff agrees that it's acceptable to permit. We could go that way here. That's possible. However, we might end up with an application that has features that exceed what staff is comfortable supporting, and we would be back before you as a regular hearing item. While it could go as a consent item, I'm reluctant to say it could go just a complete administrative unless items were removed and or you agreed certain items were within the bounds of the structure, and only those items outside of that have to be taken down for now, and that we go through a public interest review to, seek approval of those, and they build them back if it is approved. So that's the sort of the steps or different aspects of it you could consider, but I would be reluctant to say that we could just administratively do the whole thing as it exists today, even if we didn't get protest.
Thank you. Mr. Tanker, do you have a question?
My question was for Mr. Daniels. He had mentioned he thought there was a path forward, and I wonder if you might elaborate a little bit on that.
I think there's, if we go round and round, we might as well would be pretty direct. It seems to me there's two potential paths forward. One is pursuit of the conversation we've had with respect to the Riggs filing a JPA and trying to get some expedited consideration of that. I was trying to confer with the Riggs. I didn't hear all of Mr. Watkinson's response about a page two. And the other is one you could do today, the atypical, which would be to make a determination that it's no permits necessary for this project. Obviously, the latter is expeditious. It is, frankly, efficient. The downside is it is atypical. It doesn't fit within one of the particular little modes that you normally do this, but your counsel has said you have that authority. I have seen you all exercise that authority in enforcement matters, and I learned sitting back there that that's kind of where we are today, back in May of this year. So those are the two paths.
Can I follow up question, Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead, Mr. Tanker.
With the no permits necessary path, the logic for this commission, could you elaborate on that?
The logic would be, my logic would be,
sure,
and it won't be, would be this. The Riggs family has been receiving correspondence relative to their inability to use this property since October of 2011. There have been numerous pieces of correspondence, some quite severe, with respect to what the Riggs had done wrong. There's no question, and the Riggs have said, and I've said to you all, that they did expand this property without benefit of permit. And in a perfect world, they would have come to the commission or, in their belief, would have gone to the city of Virginia Beach, because, recall, they do pay real estate taxes to the city of Virginia Beach on this piece of property that you all own. So maybe I need a little reimbursement for my real estate taxes. they've been subject to this duress. They've not had the ability to occupy their residence. By virtue of the actions of the commission, they've completely lost any dominion or control over it. They have gone to expense to do exactly what this commission asked them to do in May. They spent money on redoing power lines, putting placards up, which are not absolutely necessary, but which they agreed to do. The only placards you'll see in Back Bay, warning voters of power lines. They hired, at great expense, the premier ancient title examiner in the Commonwealth. They hired, at additional expense, the premier title company in the Hampton Roads area with regard to this, the Bridgeforth folks. They've provided opinions with respect to that property. What you got today from the Attorney General tries to cut into that somewhat, but there's at least, if you count, five different places within that opinion where they say they didn't have information. And if you look at the last line in the letter from Bridgeforth Title, it says, should you have any questions, please call me. You know any calls they've gotten? You know how many calls I've gotten to talk about it, notwithstanding the fact that they had these questions about what was in the information? None. Nobody's talked to anybody. And that is not what this commission suggested should occur on May 22nd. I know the chairman wasn't there that day. But what this commission said, go fix the power lines within whatever number of days it was we did it. I came back and gave you pictures and proof of that. So they've done that. They went forward and they hired the title examiner. And they brought back to you a fairly significant document with the best experts we could find. In fact, the commission or the staff's expert says, and Mr. Watkinson just said, he agrees that there's no break in the chain of title from the Crown to Ram Island. There's an ambiguity, which your expert raised, which we've looked at. And I can give you a letter today from Bridgeforth that says they looked at that ambiguity, which was the suit in Chancery. So I'm getting a little bit off track. But my point is, every single thing, plus some, that the Riggs have been asked to do in this matter to try to find resolution, they have done. They've done it with dollars they don't have, and they've done it with time they don't have, and they have not set foot in that building all summer long. So that's the rationale why we ought to bring this to a conclusion today, because enough is enough. And there's
Mr. Plumlee.
And I appreciate everything you've said, Mr. Daniel, and you've done a great job for your client. I do see, though, there was a notice signed for back in March of 2012 in which the clients were advised by Mr. Wilkinson that that they could also submit a joint permit application. That was made part of that signed notice back, and we're going back to March of 2012. And I'm not saying the process has been perfect for your clients and this delay is entirely their fault. I don't mean to suggest that in any way. But what we're saying, I believe, as a group we're trying to communicate is if you put all options in front of us instead of saying no, we're going to slice it down to yes or no on this one item, that it may work out best for everyone to do that. That's all I'm saying, and I don't have any other knowledge of what's going on in anyone else's mind up here. That's just from me on what I'm...
I don't mean to draw a hard line in the sand between this way or no way. I'm not doing that. If it was received that way, let me backtrack and make sure. I mean, when we talked about the options, I thought I talked about two. And, you know, it's between two, we have a preference. But I understand the commission is, like us, is looking for ultimate resolution on this matter. And I appreciate the discussion. It's just we have a very strong preference and I think very good reasons to support some ultimate resolve of the matter here today. At the time, back when the original request for a JPA, I mean, you know, the the rigs are sitting there, and it becomes a matter of principle. We own this. They don't have jurisdiction. And staff didn't believe that. They didn't, you know, and they said, and we came to the commission, and they said, well, let's do this process. And, you know, we did the process, plus some, and we're still talking about it. So, I know it's late, and I don't want to. I really don't want to trespass. I mean, we have a lot of material. We all got this letter from the memo, internal memo, last night. You know, at 7:59, approximately. but we did read it. And Mr. Klein and I were on the phone into the wee hours of the night talking about this, and again, you know, again this morning. So we've done a fair amount of work on it, notwithstanding the hour. And we can, I don't want to belabor that with you, but I don't want to leave it unsaid either. So I'm at the. You all tell me how you might like to, how you might like to proceed, and I'll follow you.
I don't want to place anybody in a bad circumstance, neither the state or the applicant or the whatever we call respondent here today. But I would move to defer this to provide an opportunity for the submission of a JPA for consideration. I don't want to do that over their objection, though. I don't want to do it if they're saying we're not going to do that. If that's the position that they're in, if they believe that they have a right to go forward, then I'm prepared to sit here for the next 8 hours and listen to every single bit of the testimony they have to present. But my preference is to make that motion so that this commission has all of the tools that it needs to consider this and not just what we've discussed.
Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second that.
Second by Mr. Fox for discussion.
I'll just add to some of the reasoning here. One is, as I sit here now, and I have a high regard for Mr. Daniel and his ability to speak, but with this document that we've gotten from the Attorney General's office, I'm not sure after 6 or 7 hours that Mr. Daniel is going to change my opinion that anybody but the Commonwealth owns this. I believe the Commonwealth owns it based on this document. So I think the best route forward is, as Mr. Plumlee has suggested and motioned, and it also, I'm favorable to that because it would involve the public. I'm sorry that it takes another meeting. I regret that.
I'd like to just ask if the maker and seconder of the motion would also, with that, suspend the enforcement action pending receipt of the JPA application. In other words, by doing this, we're saying we're going to at least suspend moving forward with that aspect while we consider request and consider a JPA.
I would suspend it without prejudice if that's
okay.
Available to us.
Is that acceptable to the second of the motion?
Yes.
Discussion. Mr. Tankard.
I certainly understand what my colleagues are saying, but at the same time, we know that the Burt Riggs have paid taxes, in fact, on this piece of property. You know, that they've called their own, they've bought with title, and the title folks have said that there's no real break in the continuity of from the grant, King's Grant, to their current paying of taxes to the city of Virginia Beach. Therefore, I'm not convinced by the Attorney General's letter, which I see is somewhat ambiguous and makes its own questions about what the real truth is. And I also believe that we need to dispense justice as quickly as possible. The Riggs are Virginians, whom they deserve this. So I would rather see a no permit necessary in this instance. I think this is their property. and I don't think that we have any part in what they do with their property.
Mr. Sessions?
I agree with Mr. Tankard. And in addition to that, we did ask the applicant to spend his money for the title search, and I mean, at a minimum, we need to hear what their what they have to say. But I agree. I think it's their property. Certainly paying taxes on it is an indication of that. And I'd like to hear more about it, but I'm going to have to agree with what Mr. Tankard said also.
Let me ask Mr. Watkinson, and it may be a mere formality, but can we issue an NPN in the absence of an application? In other words, if we look at our past NPNs that we've issued, they've typically been in response to an application, as I understand it, and I may be missing something, but
is that just some semantics? An NPN is no permit necessary, of course, just to clarify, and I don't think we all know that, maybe folks here today don't always connect our acronyms with the words that go with them. I think what you're being asked to do is decide that the commission would take no jurisdiction over this project, and therefore no permit is necessary. So it's a matter of sort of, seems to me, and Paul can weigh in if he thinks I've mischaracterized it, but take the position that you are not taking jurisdiction in this matter, and therefore no permit is necessary, and that's the NPN based on the not taking jurisdiction. Now, usually when I issue an NPN, you say it's for a private pier, or is it a man-made canal, or what the reason is.
Well, and as you pointed out, it's typically in response to some sort of statutory exemption or something along those lines. I just wanted to ask if it was a mere formality or if you thought we could do that without in the absence of the JPA.
I think that's
okay.
Did I have a comment,
Mr. Dana?
If I can be heard, just while this motion's out there and we're considering that, I do want to respond to the issue of taxes because. And I hate to bring all this to bear, but I have practiced land use law for a long dang time. And if the tax people could determine who owns land, the state would own everything all the time. They'd figure out a way to do it. But that's not who determines ownership. And so what it's going to require here today, in my view, if we're going to really make this determination of no permit necessary, and I'm perfectly willing to do it, is to sit here and hear out these defects or issues that have been raised by the staff of the Attorney General's office and to have the point counterpoint brought out. I would expect that because I wouldn't want to not have the opportunity to hear that before making the decision on whether or not we don't have jurisdiction. So I just want to make that point clear. In my view, I think that's
Before we get to that, I'd like to ask counsel again if he could elaborate a little bit on this question, because it seems to me that one option is for the commission not to necessarily say it doesn't have jurisdiction, but rather just to recognize the complexity of the case and say that while we believe we have jurisdiction, we're not going to exercise it in the case and simply NPN the outcome. Is that an option?
That's a very accurate characterization of what I've been describing.
If that can be done without prejudice to the state on this issue, and I don't want that, we decide issues of public trust, that's one of the things I don't want this to be swept into that discussion later in some negative way for the state.
Okay. I mean, if I could, I think we started this discussion some time back with, Tony suggesting, and accurately so, that the issue of jurisdiction with respect to title is something that can be discussed and brought up at any point in time. I think the jurisdiction we're talking about here is, does the commission have the authority to rule in this way at this time on these issues? So it's not, we're not asking that the Commonwealth to make a determination in an NPN that it doesn't own the bottom. They can hold on to that till eternity. It's fine by me, and I think the Riggs could as well. But
But it's just in this instance, it's been land ownership has been the issue for there to be a determination of no jurisdiction. I think that's the only issue that's been brought to my attention.
May I clarify, please, Mr. Commissioner? I apologize. I, with the discussion going on, I feel like I haven't done my job in stating this clearly. The question, as I would formulate it before the commission, isn't whether it has jurisdiction, but whether it's going to decide to exercise it. And in the current circumstance, I would submit to the, for the commission's consideration that regardless of whether it believes it has it, in these circumstances, it can decline to exercise it without having any negative implication about whether it has jurisdiction now, in this instance, presently or in the future, or in any other instance, presently or in the future. I hope that helps.
Mr. Sussman?
I want to clarify one thing, and Mr. Plummer, you're right. Whether the property is taxed or not does not determine ownership. But I have read my share of title reports. And of course, we don't have a full title report from either the applicant or the Attorney General. But in reading the correspondence from Bridge Trust and the Attorney General, and we're not here to make the determination, I understand that, but it appears very convincing to me that there is unbroken chain of title. And I just feel uncomfortable holding these people up without a convincing argument that there is a break in that chain of title, and I haven't been convinced of that yet.
I mean, I can understand that. I've not reached the same conclusion you have with regards to their unbroken chain, and that's why I'd want to go ahead and go through the course of the evidence and the presentation. If the sole reason for us not to reach the conclusion of a permit required is land ownership, you know, which I think is what we're doing. I understand your opinion, and maybe that's sufficient, as we've got the opinion of our attorney saying it's no ding against the state if we pass on this as a jurisdictional issue that we don't want to make a ruling on. But so far the argument has all been around land ownership, and so I don't want to leave that without having the presentation of evidence that that's what the basis of our decision is going to be. So I don't withdraw my motion if we want to vote on that, but I think I understand where everybody's coming from.
I was going to get back to that. So we are still debating a motion, and so I wanted to try to circle back to that discussion if we could, and we've heard arguments for it. We've also heard, I think, support for moving forward in a at least considering an NPN approach to the question. Mr. Kugelman, did you have any further comments at this point?
Just one briefly. I want to make sure the commission's clear that I'm not advocating policy one way or the other. It's not my job. And if I've crossed that line, which I hope I have not, but if I have, it was wrong with me, and I apologize to the commission and to the public for that. Again, I'm just laying out as best as I can the objective legal rule and let the commission know that the boundaries of the jurisdiction, the boundaries of the options that it has under the law. That's all I'm trying to do. So if I've trampled on anybody's policy toes, I did not mean to do that.
So we have a motion before us. Mr. Dana, did you want to offer any more comment on that? I know you've spoken in preference for moving forward with an NPN.
No, I think I've said my piece on it. I'm trying to follow the I thought we had a substitute motion.
Not yet.
You don't sit on the board yet.
Too many conflicts, man. I ain't coming up there.
You may be eliciting one, but it's not on the table yet. So for further discussion, I think we're at the point we need to figure out how we want to move forward either through the JPA process, which would involve Tony. Can you give us a timeline on that? I mean, if we have a timely JPA submittal, what would be how quickly could we come back?
If we get it to you next week, when can you deal with it?
And then usually our public interest review takes 60 days, give or take, and this is a complicated case, but we will do what we can to get through and get it back to you for hearing, if that's what it requires. I assume it will. within that time frame. That's a typical turnaround. As you well know, we run into contentious cases sometimes that drag on for a long time, but I think we know some of the basic facts here and some of the basic issues, and it's just a matter of gathering the public comment and agency comments and getting it back to you and laying the material on the table as a result of the public interest review.
Well, I would think that given the history of this case, if we go down that road, that we would give it the highest priority and hear it as quickly as possible. Mr. Fox.
I will note that we have merged our November and December meetings into one meeting. So that would be probably the target for you.
About 45 days from now. You know, we'll do what we can.
Well, there's an October meeting.
I don't know about having an application for you to consider them the other route, but I think we know a lot of what we're going to hear.
Thank you.
I know John will keep me on task when he's the proposal of an applicant. He usually does a good job of that, and we usually work together. It's a lot easier being on his side than on the other, I will admit, but he's diligent, and we'll do what we can. If he says he'll give us something out of the way, I'll show you.
Thank you, Tony. Further discussion by the commission. Mr. Sussman.
And I'm not brushed up on my parliamentary rules, but is a substitute motion, can that be made now?
Yes, it may.
And my motion would be that we move ahead, that we do not have, help me with this, not jurisdiction. Well,
No
permit necessary.
There's a second to the motion? Your motion would be to find that no permit's necessary in this case.
That is correct.
Second by Mr. Tankard. Would you all like to, either as maker or second of the motion, elaborate on rationale or further discuss it?
I would say, based on what Mr. Tankard and I've already said with regard to the current situation, that the applicant has been asked to do something, he's done it. I personally am happy with the title report that he has back. I am surprised that Ridge Trust had no questions asked about the issues that the Attorney General found, and I'm comfortable with the current chain of title, as evidenced by Ridge Trust.
Yeah, I would concur with those sentiments exactly, and additionally, I feel as though this issue has gone on at a length of time, which it's incumbent on us to act in some fashion that's timely.
Tony, can I ask you
a question?
Go ahead, Mr. Fox, and I want to put Tony on the spot again.
I just want to ask the makers of the substitute motion if they would intend for the substitute motion to say that we would go with an NPEN, because even though we have authority, but we choose not to exercise it. Is that the way you would go?
I would accept that.
Yes, that would be my line of reasoning as well.
Okay, Tony, if I can put you on the spot and ask you, you've heard the discussion around the table, but do you think from a policy standpoint this in any way prejudices the commission's ability in the future to deal with questions arising from the public trust as it relates to jurisdiction?
I think I mentioned my perspective on that earlier, and I think I'll try to repeat what I said. Issue of jurisdiction can always be raised at any time, but occasionally, from time to time, we have people saying, "Well, we don't think you have jurisdiction." To us, where does your jurisdiction come from? And just to recap, it's based on the Commonwealth ownership of the submerged lands of the common trust for everybody, and that's why we have jurisdiction. It's not a police power; it's a proprietary responsibility to authorize private uses of public land. And so what I'm afraid would happen is that down the road we would have folks come in with claims of ownership, and we'd be presented time after time, or could be more often than we have been, that here's some evidence, I believe I own it, and Paul would be in the same situation he's been in this case, providing some legal advice to us on whether there's reasonable expectation that there is some chain of title there. And so if we would be faced with this scenario probably more often as a course of action by folks who didn't want to get our permit or feel they had to get our permit, right or wrong.
Tony, if we say that we have jurisdiction, but we're going to move forward with an NPN despite that, what would the city's role be in terms of evaluating or approving the structural modifications that took place to the structure? I mean, they're involved.
Yeah, they are. And I'll characterize what I understand to be the case. The commission first was looking into all the issues associated with who has to permit what, who's involved in the jurisdiction here, and one thing we realized is that the city building permit office had not been involved and the authorization had not come from them. And so we started pursuing that issue to find out what was involved, and because it was thought to be on state-owned submerged lands early on, the city said, well, if it's on state property, we unlikely have jurisdiction from a building code standpoint unless it's relinquished to our, assigned to us by the state office of, help me, Paul.
DGS, Department of General Services.
I'm sorry. Thank you. And so we began to track that they would be the building permit folks, and they wanted to see this property, and they went up and looked at it. Subsequent to that, they relinquished their authority to the state. And I think there's correspondence in the record to that, or to the locality. I'm sorry, DGS relinquished its authority to the locality, and they do that from time to time in state parks and other places for local building authority. And so that was done. The City of Virginia Beach started down their path of review, and in a nutshell, they had said, we'd like to see you get to the Ram Island Riding Gunning Club, get all your state approvals and your permits from them, and for us to finalize or proceed with our building code review. So the City of Virginia Beach is in the midst of that whole process, or will be in the midst of that whole process for building code approval and occupancy permits, and I think John alluded to that as the fact as well. And so that's sort of the scenario of how we got there and the fact, and to make a long story short, and, you know, I took a lot more to answer that question, I think, than probably necessary, but I thought the history there was important. But the Virginia Beach would be, as I understand it, issuing a building permit and an occupancy permit for the structure.
Thank you. Mr. Danner, do you have a final comment on the motion?
I think real good. What the City of Virginia Beach has basically said, not basically, what they've said is, call us when you get done at BMRC. And that's kind of where we are. And there's logic to that. I don't know why they would be pursuing something if they didn't think it could ever be there anyway. So it's just an efficient use of city resources. So whether we like it or not, somebody's got to go first. You know, Mr. Tankard asked me a while ago about what I thought was the logic and the rationale for an NPN. Well, we just added 4 more months. We just added 120 days. And I asked right when he was standing, I asked, what if I get it to you next week? I get no answer. This is the way it goes. We've added 4 months. If you go back in your materials, you'll find a letter where I originally asked for 4 months to do this title work. And Mr. Watkinson got up here and said, that's way too long. We need it in 2 months because we got to resolve this. And now we're going to add 4 months.
Further discussion by the commission?
Well,
Mr. Plumlee.
Yeah, I don't think I've heard anything that's going to change my position, but I think with regard to this issue of what's the cause of not finding jurisdiction, it makes me uncomfortable, and that's the reason. And I haven't had a chance to explore all these issues of title ownership to my satisfaction, particularly in light of not having seen the memo until we all sat down at the table, basically. And I'm sympathetic to the applicant or to the respondent under these circumstances. And perhaps delay is an alternative reason. It's not sufficient to move me, but it may be what we rely upon at a later time when we're trying to explain why this won't work, coming in a different scenario, different circumstances with a new applicant or new respondent to an enforcement action saying, I own this property. You know, we need to cling to something, I think, other than us making a determination of land ownership, which we're not quite qualified to make, I think, at this juncture. I know there are those who feel less comfortable doing it than others, at least. I'll put it that way. So that's why I'm going to stick to this position, but certainly fully understand the reasoning going on and respect everyone for choices they're going to make.
Mr. Tucker?
Well, I guess I'm not a lawyer, and I keep things perhaps a little simpler than I should, but it seems to me that they're paying taxes. They, quote-unquote, own the land, own the house now, and it would be up to us to almost, in my mind, to disprove that. We have not done that. They still own it, in my opinion. We haven't disproved that. And thus, I think we should move on. That's my logic for the no permit necessary. We've done nothing to disprove their ownership. Bottom line.
Any further comment?
Is the commission ready for the question? And I'll just tell you right up front, you guys know how to put somebody in a hard spot.
You've handled it well.
This is the last time we're meeting with five, I'll tell you that right now.
So we have a motion to substitute, which is, again, to NPN and do so without acknowledging the fact that the state doesn't have jurisdiction, right?
That's correct.
Yep.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign?
No.
No.
Motion fails for lack of majority. We're now back to the main motion. Is the commission ready for the question? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, like sign?
No.
Chair votes yes. Motion carries. So we'll be suspending the enforcement action without prejudice and requesting submission of a JPA.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mr. Daniel, and I can assure you we'll try to work with commission staff to make sure that this gets expedited as fast as possible from here.
That would be much appreciated.
Indeed.
By the rig, so thank you very much.
Thank you all for your time.